A month and a half after Governor Kathy Hochul unveiled the details of her housing compact, which is designed to incentivize and cajole the creation of 800,000 new homes over the next decade, the Senate Democrats returned volley, outlining their own housing priorities for budget negotiations, which need to be wrapped up in about 2 weeks, as a final deal is due on March 31st. To discuss the Senate majority's response to the governor's housing plan and much, much more on the housing front, we're joined on the Capitol Press Room by Senate Housing, Construction, and Community Development Committee Chair Brian Kavanaugh, a Manhattan Democrat. Welcome back to the show, Senator.
It's always great to be here. Thanks.
So the governor's plan to double the rate of new home construction was a mix of carrots and sticks. It seems like the Senate plan is all carrots when it comes to creating housing. Why did your conference reject the governor's idea to let local zoning decisions be essentially overridden by some sort of state entity if growth targets weren't achieved in the future?
It's important to note that we've retained a lot of the structure of what the governor proposed. You know, the governor had set targets for various parts of the state and had set ways to be in conformance with those targets that include various what are called preferred actions in the bill that localities can take to change their zoning to permit more housing. What the legislature in both houses has done is said, roughly speaking, that those are the right goals, but we are going to provide greater incentives for localities to do that than the governor had proposed. But as you note, we've eliminated the notion that at the end of that process, if you don't make the target, that you go into a period where the state government can override local control. And I think it's fair to say that some people were skeptical of the specifics of what the governor proposed. And I think some people just in concept think it's important that these decisions remain local. I've been in the past a proponent of, you know, ensuring that every locality is doing its part, you know, personally. But I think, you know, it's at this stage, the legislature has staked out a somewhat different approach. And I think over the next 2 weeks, we'll figure out in negotiations whether there's, you know, compromise between those positions or whether the legislature holds fast to where we are right now.
Well, it seems like the major part of your plan to grow the housing supply is this $500 million pool of funding that's available to municipalities who essentially adopt smart growth policies. What if municipalities essentially don't care about those financial incentives? Is there anything else that might prompt changes in the way we're seeing housing built over the future? Because in the past, we've seen 400,000 homes over the last decade, and the governors argue that that's not fast enough. So will these financial incentives actually be enough to move communities?
Yeah, I should note there are other elements of what we're proposing that are on the table, the governor's proposal about converting commercial space to residential, which she had proposed that be permitted in New York City by, you know, creating some regulatory flexibility and also a tax incentive program. The Senate is accepting both elements of that, but we've expanded the tax exemption to be a statewide option. So basically any locality in the state can opt into that as well. But again, the provisions for New York City that the governor proposed are intact in our proposal. And so in addition to retaining some of the structure of her, what you call the carrots and sticks, we retain the carrot, but not the stick. But I think that, I think it remains to be seen. I'm somebody that has been, you know, very committed to the notion that we need to do what's necessary. This is a crisis of affordability and availability and ultimately a crisis of homelessness. You know, I think it's important that we address that. The legislature also has been very strongly committed to the notion for many years that you also need a rental assistance bridge. So we would put $250 million in our expense budget to cover the first year of that. That is a very significant infusion of cash into the system. And again, if you have an ability to pay the rent, that does tend to induce people to provide housing. So, you know, I think there's a variety of elements here. If it were up to me, I think we might have moved a little further in the direction of what the governor wanted. Although, you know, some of the mandates that she did propose would have needed, you know, significant, changes in order to make them acceptable. Even to folks who find them conceptually acceptable, there were still a lot of the details to be worked out. But at this point, we're saying no to those particular mandates, and we're going to have a continued conversation over the next 2 weeks about what's necessary.
So the conversation that we've been focusing on so far is largely about building housing for the future. But you and I have also talked multiple times about the need to get and keep people in housing right now. And to that end, you've been really pushing this housing voucher program. What, if any, sort of voucher program made it into the Senate's One House budget?
Yeah, there are two very big investments in rental assistance. One is the, as you mentioned, the Housing Access Voucher Program, which is a $250 million first-year investment that would stand up a brand new, fully state-funded rental assistance program modeled on the federal Section 8 program, which has been very successful. That has been, you know, that's something I introduced originally 3 years ago, but it was a priority last year of both the Senate and the Assembly, but we fell short. So we are re-upping that in both the Senate and the Assembly's One House resolutions. We are proposing once again to do that. And again, in a world where I think the governor wants some big policy priorities that are housing related, we think it's important that we bring our priority there to the table as well. The other big element is a very large infusion of cash to cover the remainder of the Emergency Rental Assistance Program. The program has closed for new applicants as of January 20th, but there are still about $400 million short of covering the full cost of people who have applied who are eligible. And it happens that because the state restricted access to that program for people who are public housing residents or residents of other affordable housing funded by Section 8, that $400 million represents a shortfall for those tenants in that housing. So again, both houses of the legislature have stepped up and said, and the Senate has $389 million, the Assembly has $385 million, but in both cases, we're proposing to fully fund that need. And I think that's it's a very significant priority for a lot of us.
Well, for listeners who are just joining us, you're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and we're talking about housing policies and funding in budget negotiations. And our guest is Senate Housing, Construction, and Community Development Committee Chair Brian Kavanaugh, a Manhattan Democrat. And those two immediate proposals that you're talking about, the housing voucher program and emergency rent relief, are different, though, in the sense that one is a recurring investment or would need to be, and the other is a one-time source of funding. So does that make the emergency rent relief more likely to finally be in a final budget because you won't need to pony up the money in the future? Because I have to imagine that's one of the challenges that you face when trying to gain support from the executive for the housing voucher program, since division of budget is not going to be very excited about taking on a new recurring cost worth hundreds of millions of dollars.
I think that is an accurate assessment of the challenges and the perspectives that we've heard so far from the division of budget. Although, you know, I haven't heard them say that give the green light to the $400 million one-shot payment either. But I do think that they're particularly sensitive to recurring costs. And the case I would make is that we have for many years underfunded housing needs in New York State. And that is why we have one of the reasons we have a crisis throughout the state. The federal government provides the bulk of housing support at state and local level throughout New York. And that is, you know, it's insufficient. And just like in many policy areas, states like New York that want to genuinely solve the problem and want to have sort of progressive solutions in particular, step up and add some of their own resources. So New York has been very good in terms of providing capital resources. We did a $5.5 billion 5-year plan last year. About $25 billion in total support is flowing through state government for affordable housing, including tax breaks and other things that are authorized by the federal government. But we really have had inadequate resources to cover rent when people are facing eviction or when they're actually experiencing homelessness. And that is why we have more than 90,000. One of the reasons we have more than 90,000 people homeless at any given moment in New York. And so that, combined with the enormous social and financial cost of allowing evictions to happen at high levels, you know, I think justifies that kind of investment. It will save money in various ways in other parts of the budget because, you know, people who are homeless or evicted have much higher healthcare costs and other service costs. And, you know, we're spending several billion dollars in shelter just in New York City. And of course, more if you add other places in. So I think it's well justified. And we're certainly going to be making the case that it's necessary if we're really committed to making sure that we're addressing the housing crisis.
Well, turning to the existing housing stock in New York, What, if anything at all, does this budget do to mitigate the risk posed by something like lead, which is a serious problem in our communities that have like aging infrastructure and aging housing supplies?
Yeah, thanks for asking. We did a joint hearing between the Housing and Health Committees about 14 months ago now. And the story is a really bad one in New York. Every young child has their blood lead level tested when they're young in the hospital. And in about 4% of cases, children throughout New York State are testing as having elevated levels of lead in their blood. Lead is highly toxic. It's been known to be so for a very long time. And New York City actually has done a better job in addressing this. So the rate in New York City is about 2%. So in order to get a 4% statewide average, that means it's exceeding 6% in the state outside of New York City. And it is concentrated in particular places. So what the governor has proposed is a new program to monitor and inspect apartments where there is reason to suspect that the lead poisoning is happening, and a program in addition to do the rent to do renovations and necessary to remediate the problem and make sure that people aren't getting exposed to lead in that apartment in the future. So it's a very significant thing. Her plan focuses on particular zip codes, on basically the highest concentration zip codes, which is, you know, if you're going to focus on something, it's the best thing to focus on. But we are trying to modify it so that basically, if somebody tests positive and there appears to be lead in the apartment, regardless of what zip code is in, we have a more robust response. But again, I compliment the governor for putting this out there in her executive budget, and we are joining her in supporting that. And we've also added something related but separate, which is a rental registry that would try to track all rental apartments in the state. This is something that came out of some hearings we did in code enforcement a couple of years ago, but we've put up money for that and we're hoping to get that done because the truth is a lot of localities don't even have a reliable way of tracking where the rental housing is in their locality, which makes it very hard to enforce their local fire and building and housing codes.
Anything else in the One House budgets on the issue of code enforcement? Because we've heard repeatedly from lawmakers in the Hudson Valley about this idea that there needs to be something done at the state level to either give local code enforcement additional resources, they can expand their capacity, or essentially cajole local enforcement efforts that are just non-existent because of the way people approach their job. Is that something on the radar at all in the budget?
Yeah, I think it's not. I mean, again, the programs I just mentioned are in the budget. There's an existing fund. It's called 54G, which is the section of law that it is contained in. But it basically requires that every commercial fire insurance policy in the state have a surcharge, and that that surcharge is put into a fund that is expressly earmarked for assistance to localities with their code enforcement efforts. And yet, for many years, it has been accumulated in that fund and then periodically swept into the general revenues of the state. So I've been trying to change that. And the rental registry proposal I just mentioned, we would intend to fund out of that because it would really help localities with their code enforcement efforts. But again, we did a pretty thorough investigation of this, and the Senate has put forth a whole series of legislative proposals that are intended both to ensure that localities are doing their part if they may be reluctant to, but also provide adequate support for training and inspection resources and some of the tech resources that are necessary to do the job right. And I think that's really critical. And so I will continue to fight for that. Many of the things we need to do are not state expenditures so much as just, you know, changes in programs that are run by usually the Department of State, because that's the state entity that's responsible for code. But we're going to have an ongoing conversation about that. But again, we're starting now in the budget with trying to put some of this money into place to have systems in place that allow you at least to track what you're supposed to be regulating.
Well, finally, the budget resolution approved includes language supporting tenant protections that align with the quote unquote core principles of good cause eviction, which is in reference to legislation that creates a mechanism for tenants to challenge rent increases in court and prescribes the circumstances for an eviction. So, what does the inclusion of that language in the One House budget mean? Does that mean the Senate Democrats are unified behind good cause eviction and are going to go to the mats with the governor and the assembly to make sure it's included? Or is this more of a token sign of support to, I don't know, appease activists on the left?
No, I would say it is the official position. The Senate One House resolution is not does not reflect unanimity on each point. It's a giant document and hundreds of billions of dollars. So it's not like everybody agrees on everything, but it is the Senate position unequivocally when we say we support advancing good cause, the principles of good cause. We're talking about doing it in the budget. That's what that means in the resolution. And the basic principle of good cause eviction is that you cannot be evicted from your apartment for no reason, including the fact that you're either a month-to-month tenant and you don't have a lease, or the mere fact that your lease has expired. It is already the case that when your lease expires, if your landlord wants you to leave and you want to stay, you have a month-to-month tenancy after that. And if they want to push you out, they need to go to court. So it doesn't change any of that. What it says is you have to have good cause, which could be, serious violations of your lease or damaging the apartment or being a nuisance to your neighbors or an unwillingness to pay the rent or an inability to pay the rent. And there's this provision that gets a lot of attention that says it is not good cause to evict somebody if they're unwilling to pay an unreasonable rent increase. Under the current bill that has been floating around, that unreasonable would be defined as the greater of 3% or 1.5 times a CPI as of last August. In New York City, at least, that would be 9.9%. So, roughly speaking, if the law were in place now, a refusal to pay 10% rent increase would be presumptively unreasonable. But that even that presumption would be rebuttable by the landlord if they can explain that their costs really have gone up and they need a greater rent increase. So that is, in a nutshell, that's the provision. And again, many of us, that's been a priority for a long time. So in a world where we're trying to do a comprehensive response to housing policy, as the governor has proposed, we think it's important that that be a key part of the solution.
But like you said, there doesn't seem to be a unanimity amongst Senate Democrats on this issue. So how should we gauge the level of support for this type of issue from the Senate Democrats? Is it like a mile wide but an inch deep? Is it something that is really important to the conference when things get hot and heavy in negotiations? I mean, how should we think about it?
Yeah, I don't think there are things in our One House that are not important to the conference. It's
Okay.
not that doesn't mean every person wants everything in the resolution, but we've had very thoughtful conversations over the course of many weeks now about what our position is going to be, and our position settled on including that. There are other items that people may have wanted in housing and elsewhere that are not in there, but I think it's very significant that it's in there. And we have numerous prime sponsors of the existing bill. We have many others who have spoken up in support of getting it done, including getting it done in the budget. So, working on the details to make it acceptable to everybody to address some concerns people might have about how it will work, I think is part of this process. But the Senate, a majority, came out strongly for getting that done in the next 2 weeks in the budget. And I think that's a significant thing.
Well, we've been speaking with Senate Housing, Construction, and Community Development Committee Chair Brian Kavanaugh. He's a Manhattan Democrat. Senator, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
Same here. My pleasure. I'll talk to you soon.
Support for the Capitol Press Room provided by the New York State AFL-CIO, a federation of 3,000 unions fighting for working people by keeping New York State union strong. Visit unionstrongny.org for more information.